Welcome to the Seattle Astronomy Podcast, conversations about the cosmos with an emphasis on space and astronomy news of interest to amateur astronomy enthusiasts. I'm Greg Scheiderer, your host. I'm also the writer of the Seattle Astronomy blog at seattleastronomy.com. The total solar eclipse of August 21st, 2017 will cross the United States on a path just 70 miles wide. Seattle Astronomy is exploring places along the path for viewing the first total solar eclipse to touch the continental U.S. since 1979. We've done 9 other podcasts on this subject, talking with people across the country from Madras, Oregon to Columbia, South Carolina. This time, we're looking at the part of the eclipse path that is closest to our Seattle headquarters. Salem, Oregon is just over 200 miles away. We talked with Jim Todd, Director of Space Science Education at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry in Portland.
I'm just going to start up a viewing of the eclipse on August 21st, 2017 at the Salem Fairgrounds. And we found that the partnership worked really well there. And it's just not quite on the center line, but we're going to have a near 2-minute totality to be able to view the eclipse. We're very excited about that. And with the fairground, we have ample parking. We'll have the amphitheater. We're going to have a lot of cooperation from both of the astronomers, Oregon Observatory, NASA, and so on. They're going to be there and be part of the function. And then we'll have the Portland Tycho Band as well. We'll do a little musical performance during the event. And so we'll start all on this very early in the morning, about 7 o'clock. We'll go until noon, and we'll be ready for the totality with all this excitement just for a 2-minute totality that's going to occur on August 21st.
It's a short time, but a memorable one to everyone who's seen one. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any total solar eclipses before?
Yeah, yes, I have. I was a senior in high school when we saw the 1979 totality in Portland. And it was that day, too, that the high school teacher, my science teacher, was going to keep the class inside. And so I was able to manage to get out with my permission from the parents. And I rode in with another family and went to Goldendale. And there I got as close as I could at the Goldendale site. I didn't get all the way to the Stonehenge because the traffic was horrible up there.
I bet.
And so the family that was driving didn't realize that the eclipse had already started with the partial. And I started saying, we got to get out now. Okay. And we were able to see a majority of the totality at that point. And so that was pretty exciting for me at that point in time. But I have not seen a totality since then. And most people who live in Oregon remember that event and looking forward to the 2017 because of that event that happened in 79. Fortunately for us, it's going to be in August when we have a great chance of clear skies at that time. Because back then in 79, which February, we knew the chances were kind of bad. But we did get to see it, at least from Goldendale.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to me in 79. I was in college and, I don't know, just distracted by other things, I guess. But it totally passed my awareness by, so I missed it. So this will be my first one, presuming I get somewhere where it's visible. So.
Well, you know, it's surprising, too, in my presentation to the astronomers, I looked at all of the solar eclipses, mostly a partial, of course. That occurred since 1960 in Oregon. There were 24. So there are 24 opportunities that folks have had to see some kind of an eclipse of some form. Of course, the 79 one was a totality, but the other ones were partial, one form or another. Okay? And so some people prefer that. They'll say, I remember this, or I remember this, but not the totality. And of course, in 2017, there won't be another totality over Oregon for 154 years. Okay? We'll have the grand annular eclipse a few years later, but not a totality that people associate when we watch for them.
All right. And boy, there's such a difference between the partial and the total that you know, various people have described it as indescribably different almost. So,
Some people, once they see the totality, they become true eclipse chasers. They go all over the world. They will be right there to watch the totality. So I'm sure that we'll get a few double thousand new eclipse chasers coming out of 2017, no doubt.
Yeah. You know, I just recently spoke with a woman in Kansas City who has seen about 8 or 9 of them, I believe, gone all over the world, and her family says, what the heck are you thinking with all this? And she says, finally, one's coming right by, and I can maybe convince them. Yeah. So they're pretty excited about that coming right through the Midwest and such, too.
That's what we were seeing at when I was at the Carbondale workshop last month. All these people that were there to talk about what their plans are and what have you. I'm amazed how many eclipse chasers there are, true eclipse chasers, none more than Fred Espenat. I've seen 20-some eclipses in his lifetime. He goes to every single one of them, but that's his livelihood. He used to work for NASA, and now he has his own little company. But he goes everywhere for the eclipse.
He spoke with the Seattle Astronomical Society at our annual banquet back in January, and it was a great presentation. And he says, yeah, we're lucky in the Northwest because we've got the best weather along the whole the whole line, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and that is really what's been the talk for the 17 eclipse. You know, that Oregon is really advertised as the best place to view the eclipse, and we're expecting 10 million visitors to come down to Oregon for that one-day event. And so Oregon needs to be ready. And we have a lot of other events going on other than OMSI at the Salem Fairgrounds. But we're expecting around 10,000 at the fairgrounds in Salem. But there are other sites too. It goes without saying, we can't do this alone.
Yeah.
We just have to educate the public, make sure they understand what's involved on the eclipse.
How are you doing that with folks in other towns nearby or other organizations or whatever?
Well, what we're trying to do, we're trying to educate the public by doing like planetarium shows, teacher workshops, media, social media, all of that, get the word out and make sure they, first of all, most important is safely look at the eclipse. Because during the partial phases, you don't want to look at the sun unless you have the filter. And then we have the totality. Now, the totality is only 60 miles wide, but outside of that, it's still going to be a partial. And people have to understand that the partial is going to be visible all the way up to the Arctic Circle, down to the Panama Canal. And in that time period, they still need to wear their solar filter. It's not a totality that people are expecting to see. You have to be right there at the right place at the right time. So we're hoping to get the word out to educate the public to understand how to safely view this eclipse. And that's really important. And that was the message that we got at the workshop, that we all have to educate the public one way or another.
We've got time, but it's moving fast, isn't it?
It is. It's very much so. And, you know, this has been on my calendar for the last 4 or 5 years. I've been eyeing this event, just like a lot of folks. But now people are starting to realize it's coming. And then as soon as they find out, they try to find hotels. Most hotels are booked, and so it's going to be kind of tough. And that's what one of the concerns that we have. We have 10 million visitors coming in to Oregon. Is that one? People are going to be in places where they shouldn't be. Right? Federal land, state land, the infrastructure of Oregon, the road infrastructure. It's not like that of Illinois, where you have the freedom to move in place of what we call clouds. But if it gets cloudy, then we have pretty good chance of traffic jam. It's going to occur, and people are going to try to find the best spot of clear skies on that day. But they'll be able to know probably in a week before the event, but that's going to be the key. And so I've been in touch with the governor's office, talked to them about the agencies that need to be ready for this event, the emergency response. It will likely be hot. It will likely be crazy as far as a traffic jam, airports, hotels, you name it. It's going to be a crazy day. It's going to be one of those days people are going to remember where they were on that very day when they were looking for the eclipse.
Have you had any trouble convincing elected officials and those types that there's going to be a big deal?
No. They realize the scale of this. They really do. And they have to figure out how they're going to handle it. I'm going to give you an example. When we met the folks in Madras, And the officer that was there at the meeting, I said, "So how many officers do you have?" And they said, "Well, we only have five." Is that that's not going to work? And that could be a real problem. If something happened, they're not going to be able to respond to all the calls if something happens. They also need to be concerned that August, there's a good chance of fire, wildfires. Some roads might be closed, and all of that. So there's a lot of preparation that needs to go on now. They understand, but they just need to start thinking ahead.
Yeah. One of the first places that I spoke with was Madras, and they were saying, we've got two-lane highways mm-hmm. that cross in our town, mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes 6 hours to get to Portland on 4th of July weekend. So if people think they're just going to swoop mm-hmm. into Madras on eclipse morning, they may have another thought coming.
Yeah, and the other place that is real concern is the Highway 101, basically north and south route. And if it's cloudy, if it's foggy, which it has a good chance, people are going to start heading east on Highway 20, Highway 22, try to get to Corvallis or try to get to Salem. And if it continues to be cloudy, they're going to continue to try to drive eastward. The infrastructure may not be able to handle that very well. And so every city, every place in Oregon needs to be ready for this event.
Boy, when Espenac and others talk about knowing a couple days ahead and running for the clear skies, probably that works better in the middle of the ocean, where the mobility is not so limited to the right. paved lanes of the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Forest Service, understandably, are concerned. They really don't want people wandering around on the forest roads and what have you, where people really they can't really use that area for viewing, but they're not going to be able to enforce it. Okay? And interesting enough, I'm also the co-director for the Oregon Third Party, which I plan to do the viewing from Indian Trail Springs in the Otsego Mountain. And they're going to be a little bit further south of the center line. But that's an area where we've been working with the Forest Service and talking to them about this event. And they're scared out of their mind. And so there's no way they can enforce it. But they have programs like what we're doing with the Oregon Star Party. We're in a control environment where we can actually get a certain number of registration and control the crowd in our vicinity. Okay? But we can't do that outside of our area. There's likely people just going to show up, and we can't really do anything about that. But that's their concern. There's also a very large event in Madras, but also just outside of Madras, called Symbiosis, where they're expecting 10,000 people for a five-day event, kind of like a Burning Man function. Uh-huh. And so right there's several thousand people all over the place. Salem is where Omdi's going to be, but the Volcano Stadium is going to be used for the viewing. Willamette University, Southern Oregon, all the state parks are trying to gear up for it with extra staff, extra porta potties, but their parking really can't handle the large scale event like this. So it goes back to saying too is that there's going to be a day that people are going to remember where they were, and also we're probably going to find out in the social media how crazy it was.
Yeah.
But we're hoping, we're very optimistic, going to be clear skies for that day.
You know, it's interesting to note, for the transit of Venus a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. we were totally socked in here in the Northwest, and I ended up down in a little county park near Corning, California. I just drove mm-hmm. south till I found sun. Mm-hmm. And there were like two other people in this park, and the park manager came over and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, there's the transit of Venus." Mm-hmm. And just a few weeks before that, was the annular eclipse that came through. Mm-hmm. And he said that same park was packed elbow to elbow mm-hmm. for that annular solar mm-hmm. eclipse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nobody was interested in the transit of Venus, last one for 122 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, transit of Venus is a rare event, but the eclipse is something special about it. For a lot of people, in their emotional response, it could be spiritual, it could be astronomical, it could be personal, a lot of different reasons. And one of the reasons why we kind of have the Portland Tycho Band for our event is the Orients, when they see that it's the dragon that's swallowing the sun. to get the dragon to release the sun, they bang on the drum and have fireworks. Bang really hard to hope that the dragon would let go of the sun and it would come back. So that's kind of the approach. I've always wanted to do that. It's magical, and it's going to be an amazing event.
It sounds like it. What sparked your personal interest in astronomy and solar eclipses and stuff?
Well, astronomy has kind of started back in 1969, on July 20th, 1969, when the Apollo 11 landed on the moon. Neil Armstrong walked down the ladder and what have you. And I was only 8, 9 years old then at the time, and I was living in Nebraska. I remember vividly, like yesterday, watching on a black and white TV. And from there I got hooked. And my uncle worked for NASA. He was involved with the building of the space shuttle, and he was involved with the Apollo 14. And so on. So he was able to send me a lot of interesting material and then continued to strive on it. And I kind of self-taught myself astronomy and space science. And then I was actually interested in becoming a teacher, a science teacher in college. And one thing led to another. And then an internship opened up at OMSI for the planetarium. And I took it. And I've been here for 33 years now. So I've been able to be my way of getting close to NASA, but getting close to all the astronomical events. And it's one of those jobs, the very few jobs, that where the hobby has actually become the job. Okay? So I was able to combine my passion with astronomy and space science with the teaching and the computers and so on, and it was a perfect fit. And so it's been nothing. I couldn't think of any other way I could find a wonderful job like I have right now.
I've heard a number of people say don't do what you love for a living, but apparently you're the exception to that rule if it is one, right?
Yeah.
Well, cool.
And it's really been very exciting because I've been involved with all of this, like you mentioned, the Mars event, the Leonid storm, the eclipses, the lunar eclipses, and so on. Every event that ever have happened, we've been there. So I feel very fortunate to be able to share that excitement with the public. And that's where we kind of fall into that area for the 2017 eclipse. The public expectations are high that they would do something. Okay, so that's where we kind of fall into that area. And so we have to be ready for this, and they're expecting that we be a place of a resource where we can provide information, how to view it, where to get the glasses, where to go, and so on. So we're trying to prepare for that.
Well, I think it's great that OMSI has this commitment to space and astronomy, and it seems like you have a great relationship with Rose City astronomers, too, and it provides a lot of volunteer oomph for you.
Yeah, they're very much going to be involved as a partner, and it's a wonderful relationship that we've had with Rose City astronomers since the beginning. And I was there with the Portland Astronomical Society in the early days, and where Rose City astronomers were born, the astronomers in Portland astronomers joined, become Rose City astronomers, and they have grown to a few, now up to 400, one of the largest membership in the nation, and they're a wonderful group to be involved with.
Why would you say that they're so big? Is it just a enthusiastic space city, or are there other reasons?
Well, I'm sure. But Oregon had one of the darkest skies in the nation other than Texas, and that's why the Oregon Star Party is very popular every summer. And we have nearly about 600 people come out for the Oregon Star Party every summer for the event. And the key there is that we have a really dark sky, but it's transparent. And we don't have the heavy moisture like the rest of the nation have to contend with in the summer. And here we have the very nice marine air that cleared out the skies and made it very unique. And so I think that all the excitement happened there. But I also like to think, too, that because Portland has a very science-minded audience, and they love these kind of events. And we like to think, too, that OMSI had a role in that in some fashion, that get people excited about astronomy and all the other areas of science. And Rose City astronomers have been a wonderful access in that fashion as well.
Yeah, it's you've got all the institutions, you've got great colleges and universities here. It seems like it's well primed for some good astronomy.
And we have wonderful relationship with NASA. Get funding from them and what have you, but they're also providing us with a lot of great resources. There's a lot of excitement there. It really shows by the turnout that we get for our events, like the Eclipse, and we have star parties that Omdi does every year from March through September, one star party a month, where we go to Stubbs George State Park and Rooster Rock State Park, two locations in one night. Most of the astronomers bring out their telescope. I do the star talk. And we get generally a few hundred people for each star party. But then the August Perseid meteor shower, we get about 2,000 to 3,000 people per site. And it's a big event, but a wonderful, wonderful environment to be in.
We've been talking with Jim Todd, Director of Space Science Education at OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry in Portland. You can track plans for the OMSI Total Solar Eclipse Viewing Event in Salem and buy tickets for that event on the OMSI website at omsi.edu/eclipse-2017. You'll find more links on our website at seattleastronomy.com. That's it for this edition of the Seattle Astronomy Podcast. Keep up with day-to-day news on our blog, find astronomy events on our calendar, and check out our store for recommendations for astronomy books, gear, software, and gadgets. It's all at seattleastronomy.com. The Seattle Astronomy Podcast is copyright 2016 by Seattle Astronomy. Our theme music is Aboard the Alien Craft from the album Symphony for Spaceman by Steve Combs and Delta Is. It's on freemusicarchive.org and is used under a Creative Commons attribution license. I'm Greg Scheiderer, wishing you clear skies. Thank you for listening.